Meditation.
Depending on the quality of my mind.
You know, there's good days and bad days. And good days as well.
Feel like the waterfall of thoughts. And every now and then, a nice calm.
I can't think of anything.
This is Meditation in the City.
The Shambhala New York podcast.
And I'm Dave, your host. Welcome back to the podcast. Each week we feature a different talk by one of our teachers in the Shambhala Buddhist tradition. And today's talk is by Natalie Baker, a regular contributor to the podcast. And I'm not going to talk too much because I want to get right to this talk. This is the topic here is about making friends with loss, dealing with loss. And it's such a good talk, and it's such a great discussion between Natalie and the people who are in attendance at this particular weekly Dharma gathering, that I just want to get right into it. Visit our website, nyadashambhala.org, for all of our upcoming courses and weekend retreats. Our introductory meditation course is called Meditation in Everyday Life, and it's happening October 5th, beginning October 5th, four Thursdays in October, beginning the evening of the 5th. That's a great place to start. Check the website. There's lots of great stuff coming up in the fall. And without further ado, here is Natalie Baker.
There's a story from the time of the Buddha of this young mother who was very thrilled to give birth to her first son and cherished him dearly. But unfortunately, he died shortly after childbirth. And she was devastated, and she had him wrapped around her, not wanting to let go of his dead body, and running from person to person in her village, asking if there was anybody who could bring her child back to life and help her. And someone in her village said, "Go and see this spiritual teacher named the Buddha. Maybe he can help you." So she went and had an audience with the Buddha and asked him if he could please help her, that she couldn't live without her newborn son. And the Buddha responded and said, "Yes, I can help you." And she was overjoyed. And the Buddha said, "What I need you to do, though, is go and find for me a mustard seed." And she was immediately very excited because mustard seeds were common in every kitchen, and so not a hard task to accomplish. But before she set out, he said to her, "But there's one other part to the instruction, which is that you need to find a mustard seed from a family that has not experienced death." And so she set out, going household to household, and the first home did indeed have mustard seeds. But then she asked, "Has your family experienced loss?" And they described an uncle dying the previous year. So she had to move on to the next household. And the next household, it was a grandfather. And then it was a stillborn child. And she kept going. And upon each home and each conversation that she had an experience of recognizing that everyone experiences loss. And although she assumed that she couldn't survive her loss, she experienced in these people she met that they too had suffered the same pain and were still here and still carrying on. And so eventually she went back to the Buddha and said to him, "I understand that there's no such thing as life without loss." And at that point, she decided to practice meditation and follow the Buddha's teachings. So I tell you this story in part because we have been struggling with the pain and confusion of what does it mean to experience loss? How do we work with that? Since the time of the Buddha, so 2,600 years, this is part of what we're looking at when we practice our spiritual path. So if you don't mind sharing, I thought we could just, and you can just shout out, we don't have to wait for a microphone. I'll certainly repeat them in the microphone. But if you want to share what for you is loss, like when you think about this topic tonight, making friends with loss, what comes up for you? I'll start. I was thinking about the fact that for me recently, I feel a lot of pain from the loss of time. What I feel is not having enough time. Yes. Life changes. The loss of your childhood? Mm-hmm.
Death of my partner.
Death of a partner?
Friends.
Loss of friends? Big and small? A mother sinking into dementia. Longing to see someone again. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of control.
Loss of
support. Mm-hmm. Loss of health. Losing someone to addiction.
Loss of being sure.
The loss of what might have been. Yes, that's a juicy one. Absolutely. So for those of you who don't haven't been to one of my talks, I love people to talk to each other because I feel like a lot of the lessons come from learning from each other. So I would love for you to turn to a neighbor and introduce yourself and to just talk for a little minute or two each about what makes loss difficult for you. What is the part that is a challenge or parts of loss that are a challenge? And you can just spend a couple of minutes just talking and listening to each other, and then we'll come back together as a group. So I'm going to invite you to share something you learned from your conversation about what makes it challenging to experience and work with loss. And you can just raise your hand, but we are going to wait for the microphone so that everybody can hear you. You guys just resolved it all. There's this gentleman here.
Hello? The two of us did resolve. No, I'm just kidding. But we were talking about just being able to sit with it, the difficulty of, you know, plain simple sitting with it.
With it? What's it?
The feeling of loss, whether it be mental or physical or both. I think it's a package usually.
And what does it feel like?
For me personally?
Or you could just theoretically.
Well, I think the human body stores it in certain places, mm-hmm. whether it be the shoulders or like a physical reaction. And then the mental reactions are probably endless. The mind will chatter until you cease to exist.
It's a lot of mental chatter and tightness in the body.
Yeah, and I think it can even manifest as illness.
Illness.
Even just a meandering mind or an absent mind, mm-hmm. hard to pay attention, you know, things like that. And loss can come in all sorts of things, so depending how much of a punch it is, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
it could take a very long time to get through the physical and the mental aspects of that. At least that's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Yes, in the back there.
I, being a believer in Western psychology, think that if there's big loss in your formative years that didn't get a chance to heal, then the little losses of the present can evoke that. And so they get tangled up, and instead of being a smaller loss, it can become this huge piece, this huge loss. And when I can separate that, that's... But then it also, I think, can cause one to be very prepared, like always protecting against loss, because loss means this really devastating piece. Mm-hmm.
Great, thank you. So the losses of our past can pop up when we're experiencing the losses of the present. And then we can find ourselves protecting ourselves from what feels like devastation. Mm-hmm, thank you. Was there somebody over here?
We were talking about loss of control because... any loss, you know, it's you have an idea of what should happen, and your idea never happens. So it doesn't matter how traumatic or minor it is, there's always this feeling of, uh-oh, what happened? You know, I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yes. Thank you. And this gentleman here in the white.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. What really seems to trouble me is that we don't take a strengths-based approach to loss, recognizing, for example, that Thich Nhat Hanh will say, long live impermanence. So there's we always perceive of loss of good things over not good things. So we have this duality, and that we kind of almost feel that good means a loss of goodness, mm-hmm. with a denial of both the impermanence but also that sense of emptiness. So we're separating this from ourselves, and we kind of feel as though, and I think that's debilitating. Uh-huh. And I'm not trying to be Pollyanna about it, but I just think that there are some tools that we can use in Buddhism to try to reconcile that loss with a strengths-based approach.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. So not recognizing that the gentleman here and then over here, not recognizing that loss and impermanence also means the loss of the things that we don't like, but we always focus on the loss of the things that we want to keep permanent.
I was thinking of the story you gave us from the Buddha, and the element of empathy that could heal in some way, you know, knowing that and getting to know other people who actually have experienced this or similar loss. Not simply the intellectual knowledge that, okay, everybody has lost someone, you know, but actually talking to them and being with them, mm-hmm. which gets us out of our, you know, shell, and has some kind of healing effect. You know, it's not a resolution per se, you know, because mm-hmm. the loss is still there, but mm-hmm. It's seen in a different light and a new context. So this lady, Megan, I believe, you know, whom we just met, never. So we ended up starting sharing something very different. I'm not going to be specific. But then by talking and by elaborating, we found some kind of common experience. And, you know, that's something that's, you know.
So what belief gets shattered when we have the experience of a shared experience?
Not to be unkind to myself, but this self-preoccupation, right? Mm-hmm. This, what Sakyong said, the me-first mindset. You know, not that this is intentional, but when we are really, you know, into when a certain problem overpowers us, we forget that, you know, there's sometimes even bigger suffering, or, you know, that. And, you know, in terms of also, since we were talking about the Buddha teachings, this kind of natural, we have that, you know, with Shambhala, we call basic goodness, or, you know, or Buddha nature, or whatever, that's naturally compassionate, naturally willing to be empathetic, if we only give ourselves the chance to be that.
Right, yes, we forget that part. Yeah, well said.
Thank you.
And then there's this gentleman here.
Thank you. I guess a lot of the things that were said mentioned us wanting to hold on to whatever situation, and you know, that's something big for me. And just earlier today, I was talking to a coworker of mine who hates his job, and he has hated it for the last year or so, yet he's terrified of losing it at the same time. And when we were digging in, and we're like, well, what are you so afraid of? Because it's been a year that you felt this way. So he's told me he has like 2 years worth of savings. So like the downside of losing the job, and he's in technology, seems like probably find something else eventually, are minimal. But the fear, the real fear that he has, regardless, even if it's a bad situation, of the unknown, makes it so hard for him. For me, I think I empathize a lot when I hear that, to kind of deal with that change. So sometimes it's not just fear of something positive going away. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever we have, we just tend to hold on to it.
Yes. Yeah, and when we start to contemplate letting go of it, right, we start to notice there's all this fear there, right? And fear we perceive as an indication to just stop, right? Stop. Thank you.
So I was thinking that we tend to define ourselves by things that we have, and loss helps us because when we lose something, we realize that we're still here and we're not that thing that we used to believe was us. So it helps us rediscover ourselves.
And what do we have to tolerate? What do you, when you think about the process of experiencing the loss, and then what's the process from that moment until it registers that there's actually, as you said, there's a gift also. But what do you have to tolerate as you go through that process?
I think it's all of these beliefs that we had. We used to lead our life with these beliefs, and then when they're shattered, then it's realizing that maybe we're not living life as we really should have.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, so one of the things that's coming out of what you're talking about is that there's really two aspects of what we're experiencing when we go through the process of loss. And one side of it is the emotional part of it, the actual pain and sadness and fear. And then the other side of it is that our ideas of how we thought things were or how we thought things should be, right? They dissolve or get shattered. And so these are the two parts that we want to examine. Loss from the point of view of our beliefs about how we think things are or how we think they should be, and loss in terms of working with our emotions that arise when we experience loss. The Buddhist teachings, the first noble truth, so the first aspect of life that the Buddha wanted to communicate to students once he attained a complete understanding, complete manifestation of wisdom, how things actually are, which we call enlightenment or awakening. But one of the first things that he wanted to point out was the fact that we experience loss and suffering as being human, that actually that is how things are in a relative way. So let's first acknowledge that truth. And then we can start peeling back the next layer of that, which is that we have this belief, turns out, that we think things should be permanent, right? As someone mentioned, you know, we acknowledge that certain things we really want to keep around. And on some level, we're shocked when those pleasant things change. The unpleasant things, we're perfectly happy to acknowledge and have their impermanent nature reveal itself. But we have this idea that things should be as we want them, and that things are actually solid. And part of the Buddha's first teaching about the truth of suffering was actually that things are not solid, things are not permanent, things are compounded and always changing. So in the Buddhist path, spiritual path, the first thing is to look at an idea here. And that idea is you don't actually have to be confused because you're experiencing a sense of loss and a feeling of pain and suffering because of your losses. Which, if we just contemplated that, right? If we expected when we wake up in the morning, anything could happen, right? I could go to my job and the building could be there, or I could go to my job and the building could be gone. That's in the realm of what it means to be a human in the world. I could fall in love and love this person, and the next day they tell me, I'm not that into you, right? And that we could hold that as, yep, that's what happens. But what we do, right, is that we want to grasp, right? We want to solidify things. And then when things manifest their nature, which is to constantly change, we get all freaked out, right? We get scared. And this is the Buddha's description of how we suffer. We're actually basically confused about the fundamentals of existence. I mean, we wonder why we can't create our harmonious political situation. We can't even acknowledge the basic reality, which is things are constantly changing all the time. Right? We, every day, we wake up, we look in the mirror, we're looking at a different person. We're constantly changing. But we ignore that. We ignore that because, as someone else pointed to, that when we experience loss, we realize we're not in control. And then we experience fear. And now we're going to move on to the second part, which is the emotional part. And then there's a thought, which is, I don't like fear. We have a preference. And so we do that defensive dance that somebody mentioned earlier, right? And we think, oh, we're going to be devastated. So we try to protect ourselves from that fear. And how does that go? Right? Then we add another layer of confusion by trying to distract or change our environment, because fear, right, signals threat, right? So then we get angry. And now we're fighting, right? We're either fighting with ourselves or we're fighting with the world. Why? Because we had a glimpse of reality, which is we're not in control and things are changing and there's basic pain, right? And then there's fear, and that scares us, and we act that out. And so the Buddha thought this is really be helpful to just kind of lay it out for people. Like, yep, this is it. This is what we do. And we're still workable. Because we're not actually relating with our experience, and we can afford to do that. Emotions are not solid. They're often not accurate. They're energy. They don't actually define who we are. And if you really contemplate it, right, an emotion really is an experience. And then we label it anger, sadness. So in the Shambhala tradition, so this is the Shambhala Buddhist lineage, and the Shambhala lineage is a lineage that is meant for secular folk like us who have day jobs and lives, and it's meant as teachings that we can integrate in our daily life. We don't have to run off to monasteries or nunneries to work on ourselves spiritually. And the Shambhala approach, which is it's coined in the language of warriorship, but warriorship not in the sense of going to war against an enemy, but from the point of view of actually being able to transcend the need to be at war, the need to be aggressive in order to manifest and be in the world. And the language of Shambhala is very fruitional. So the point of view that's taken is that we can afford to meet our experience. Because the thing that makes this whole mess that we call me challenging is that we have this belief that when we're experiencing the pain of loss, the fear of loss. We think that we don't have what we need, and that the experience we're having we can't tolerate, we can't be with. And we believe that thought, right? There's the feeling, which is a very yucky feeling, right? And then there's a belief that goes with that, which is, I can't tolerate this experience. I can't tolerate this reality. And we just automatically believe that. But the teachings actually say that we can. And that that thought we're having, that we can't be with whatever it is. In this case, we're talking about loss, right? That we can't be with the pain of loss. And so we get even more scared. And we do all sorts of other things, right, to try to avoid our experience. So I'll read you a line of... The Shambhala teachings are very interesting in that they're not in a logic that you and I, as Westerners, immediately identify with. It's more poetical. And so what I thought we could do is I'm gonna guide you through a meditation practice, but I wanted to read you a line from a Shambhala root text that's actually in Shambhala's Sacred Path of the Warrior, which is a book that Trungpa Rinpoche wrote. It's taken from talks that he gave on the Shambhala teachings. But this is a line of what's called terma. So in Buddhism, there is an idea, we could say, or a reality if you believe it, that wisdom arises. So this is wisdom that's not born out of confusion, but it actually is genuinely in accordance with how things actually are. And so the wisdom teachings are what we contemplate to contrast against kind of what we think. And so we can chew on these things and notice what's different in what's being presented in the wisdom teachings versus how we think of things. So this line from the Shambhala Terma says, that mind of fearfulness should be put in the cradle of loving kindness and suckled with the profound and brilliant milk of eternal doubtlessness. That's pretty frictional. Eternal doubtlessness. When have you had a moment of eternal doubtlessness? Right? But the Shambhala teachings are saying this is actually who you are. So it's there is the problem presented, which is our fearfulness, right? I mean, when we experience loss, we're also right along with that, we're experiencing our fear. So first we just acknowledge, yep, that's what happens. We get really scared all the time, super fearful. But then what do? Put it in the cradle of loving kindness. And suckled with the profound and brilliant milk of eternal doubtlessness. That would be nice, right? Of course, we don't believe it at all. And hence, we have a path. So if you want to just take kind of good head and shoulders, I'm going to guide you through a meditation practice because, you know, really there is the teachings and then there's the meditation practice. And the two we always bring together so that the teachings start to come alive in your own experience. That's the whole point. So, First of all, I think it's good to start by just acknowledging that we kind of like to give ourselves a hard time by thinking that we're alone in our pain. And so it's good to first start by remembering the story of Kisa Gotami, that's the name of the woman who lost her son, right? So we can first start by acknowledging, you know, I'm not alone in this struggle, right? We all worry about our losses, and we all feel pain of our losses. So we could have a short discussion if people have comments or want to share their experience doing this practice.
One of the things that came up when I was discussing with my discussion partner was the time period after a loss, after the ground from beneath you gets wiped out from under you. And I always remember this quote, and I have no idea who it's from, but it sticks with me, and it's the idea that during the times when we don't experience loss, we stack all these teachings and wisdom on top of our heart in the hopes that when it breaks, some of it might seep in through the cracks. I don't know who said it, but I love it. And I think it's a great metaphor for that time period after a loss when you're everything is so raw that you experience the entire pantheon of human emotions in a way that you don't. Yes. And in that way, maybe that can be part of the other side of the coin of loss and part of the gift that comes after loss. It's a thought I had.
Great, thank you. Yeah, I can see it seeping. You know, in Buddhism, another similar expression speaking to what you mentioned is that death is a time of great blessings for the reasons you just described, you know, that breaks our hearts, and now we're so much more raw and exposed, and we can meet the world and be sensitive to the world in a way that we can't, you know, when we're busy living our lives and things are kind of going our way and we're just, you know, going along. Yes.
Thanks for the talk. I really appreciate it. It was great. And the last comment, it's something that as an adult now and having experienced loss, you know, several times, and the first time when I was young, I do have some kind of acceptance of it now and kind of going through it right now, anticipating a death that I know is going to happen very soon of someone I love very much. And but what I'm concerned now about is my children who are 8 and 6 years old, and I'm trying to think about it because I've gotten advice from people that I respect and trust, and like, you got to tell them, but the person who is dying doesn't want to tell them because they want to enjoy their time with them unfettered by, you know, the dark thought for the children, you know, of this coming event. And so I guess that for me is something that I'm really frightened by. And that was something that came up in our conversation is, you know, I want to tell, I want to explain to the children, but I don't also want to... I want their time with, it's my mother. I want their time with my mother to be like very joyful as it has been, as it always is. So it's just something that this is new ground for me personally. This is like one of these areas we're getting into where for me, it's like, I hate to see them recognizing suffering this way and death. And what's going to happen to, and how they're going to interpret it all.
Could you talk, please, a little more about what it means to put your pain in a cradle of loving kindness? We see that term, make friends with your unpleasant thoughts. And I've asked people, gee, what does that mean? And everyone goes silent. So What is one doing when one is cradling one's pain in loving kindness?
Do you have children?
Yes.
Okay, you can answer that question. Answer.
Are you cradling yourself, which doesn't exist?
Don't be. I'm pointing you towards your children to make it more experiential. Don't make it intellectual. Like, really, like, have confidence that you know what this instruction is and describe it.
Comforting.
Mm-hmm. Because what is the view you hold as a parent when you comfort your child, right? They're sad, their friend doesn't want to play with them, or, you know, something they love broke, right? And you're comforting them. And what is the view that you're holding as you comfort them? That you're not speaking, but it's just there.
You're okay.
Yep, you got it. So going back to your dilemma, right, with your children, you know, really trust yourself and hold the view, right, that it's okay. Trungpa Rinpoche used to say all the time, take a leap, take a leap. That's what you're doing right now. But I don't know, right? What's the answer? Yes?
I'm trying to think back over your talk about what methods we might use to work with loss.
Mm-hmm.
And, you brought up impermanence, and I didn't really hear you say it, but I'm guessing that the acceptance and understanding that life is full of impermanence will help dissolve and make less the suffering of loss.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you should test that one. Right? So that's what we do, right? So the Buddhist teachings will present an idea, which is, thank you. Actually, the mark of our existence is that things are constantly changing. They're not permanent, they're impermanent. And so we should have that in our expectation. So then, you know, you can do this as an experiment, right? Tomorrow, wake up and go, okay, today I'm going to really accept and embrace that things are going to constantly change. They're going to constantly be different than how they were yesterday, how I want them to be, right? And I'm just going to notice what that's like to be with the fact that things are impermanent, including my own state, right? This thing I call me, and also be curious about how do I change? Right, my moods, my thoughts, all of that.
One of the obstacles that I noticed you talking about is our wanting things to be different than they are, not mm-hmm. being in the moment accepting what is. And it occurred to me, even though I didn't hear you go into it, that one way we do that without judgment is meditating. So we could actually bring loss into meditation in a non-judgmental way, and that would be so different than our everyday way of fighting it or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's great to bring our loss to the cushion, because the whole objective of practice is to come back to what is, right? So, you know, if you are experiencing a lot of pain from something, whatever it is, you know, that you could also notice that during your meditation practice, right? And instead of bringing your attention to the breath, you could bring your attention to that feeling and just be with it, right? Don't try to change it. Don't analyze it. Just be with it as a sensation. That's the object. I'm with it. And then to be curious about, well, what's that like, right? What do I notice?
Thank you very much for your talk.
Well, thank you for filling in the gaps. So maybe we should stop here because it's 20 to 9, and I want you all to be able to enjoy the refreshments before we part ways, and certainly we can keep the conversation going. Do we have any final? No, we have no final. So thank you all for coming, and please enjoy the refreshments.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that talk as much as I did. Visit our website at nmaya.chambala.org. We have weekend retreats. We have courses, evening courses, daytime courses. Lots of great stuff going on here in the fall. If you live in a different city, there's probably a Chambala Meditation Center near you. Look us up. But if you are in the New York City area, come say hi. Come to our weekly Dharma gathering. It's every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, and you can hear these talks live and in person and meet the teachers, enjoy the snacks, and meet some other cool people. Email us at podcast@chambalanyc.org. Your questions, comments, suggestions, riddles, whatever you got, and I'll catch you next time.